Well, hello everybody.
Hi guys.
I got a sleepy big dog right here on my lap.
That's Levi.
This Levi. And he's ready to talk about rent life.
Stealing Focus.
We had a great time watching the show. It just finished out here on the West Coast.
Just finished watching Rent Live on the West Coast.
Yep.
And I gotta say, we really liked it. You know, let's get into it a little bit because, first of all, I'm a big, like, former rent head. When I was in ninth grade, I was obsessed as any other, like, tween girl was at the time. I was seeing the tour that came through, you know, I had the soundtrack. I was so obsessed with Rent. I can't even begin to tell you guys. But you did it in the national tour and the international tour,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a couple tours from 2003 to 2006 on the national tour and international tour, the 10th anniversary. I started playing Steve, who's the squeegee man and honest living guy, who was not in this version. And then I played Roger. And then in the international tour, I played Gordon. So I was the drug dealer guy with the hood.
Who are some of the people you did the show with?
I did the show with Jamie Lee Kirshner, Dan Dominich, Marcus Paul James, Rebecca Naomi Jones, Aaron Tveit, Constantine Maroulis, Brian Gligger, Daryl Brown, Damian Deshaun Smith, Justin Johnston, Andy Senor, John Eric Parker, Danielle Lee Greaves, Karen Lynn Manuel, who was one of the greatest Maureens ever, Jeremy Kushner, and Trey Ellett, just to name a few. Lots of really talented people who have done Rent over the years, and I was just lucky enough to do it with them. I was really lucky because being a part of the show, being in the family of Rent was an amazing thing for me. I had such a great time, and it's such a great piece.
So it's an interesting, you know, thing. You know, we have this guy who wasn't like a rent head, but was in the show for years, and then someone like me, who was just like a total fangirl forever, who saw any production that came by. The first production I ever saw was in LA in 97, the tour that came through with Neil Patrick Harris and Wilson Cruz. So we're both coming at it from different angles, but so more of a performer angle and then a fangirl angle, but both very familiar with the show. And I have to say, I was surprised how much I liked it.
Yeah.
Not because I don't like the show, but, you know, getting into it when you're 14 or 15, it's that thing that you get into when you're like a teenager, and it just like gets so, it's like such a part of your DNA that by the time you're an adult, you look back on it and you're like, what? Oh my God. Like it's such a different connection than when you had it as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And as an adult, I look at Rent and I see, not just as an adult, but as an adult who is a musical theater performer and a musical theater teacher, I see the problems with Rent now. And that's because, you know, Jonathan Larson died 2 days before the off-Broadway preview. Yep. So he never got to do those book changes that most Broadway book writers get to do.
Right.
Instead, it was like he died and there was like 80% good of the show, 85%. And everyone was like, yeah, we're just going to do it. And if you touch the book, it's sacrilege.
Yeah, it became canonized because of that tragic, the tragic loss of Jonathan Larson.
Yeah, it just became like, let's just not touch the book. Let's
right.
just do the show as he intended. But Jonathan Larson, you know, he loved Sondheim. He was not some novice musical theater writer. He knew that, he knew the process of writing a musical. I don't think he would have ever balked at book changes and adaptive changes and judging a script before it goes to Broadway.
Right.
And I feel like this was the first time, what, this is 2019, so this is what, 23 years after it came out?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time I actually saw someone who was ironically the original director make the adaptive changes that were sorely needed for this show.
Well, this is really what made Michael Greif's career. Marlies Yerby was choreography, Tim Weil was orchestrations, and Michael Greif was director. So with Jonathan Larson's passing, a lot of that fell onto them to really finish the piece.
Yeah, and
it hadn't quite been finished.
And there was a lot that they fixed in staging, I remember, because I would see it so many times. And there was a lot of stuff that was not clear in the book that they would fix in the staging. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't evident. Like, if you were just someone, like, getting the script in some regional theater production, you wouldn't necessarily get those. No. It was up to you to kind of figure out in the staging to solve problems that weren't there in the book. And that's never a good thing. Right. But the thing is, Rent got a pass on it because so much of it was so great, you know, and timely. And...
Well, nothing had been like it before. So it was musically innovative in this... I mean... Things had been similar to it, but I would say that it was a groundbreaking piece that at the time there was no musical out that was like it.
Yes.
And as you mentioned, Jonathan Larson was a student of the craft. He knew what he was doing. But there also hadn't been, to my knowledge, this type of representation on stage, like the minimalist concept with utilizing all of these things stylistically, like the scaffolding, the lighted up scaffolding, which became the tree, which was just a big garbage pile that we used to use. The band was under the scaffolding, and then we just used these tables for everything, these metal tables. It was so industrial, so minimalist, that it was almost nothing on the stage was representative, like what you would expect to see when you go see a play. So immediately you were thrust into this other world, really.
Yeah. It
saved the producers a lot of money. Also, it was just like these folding chairs that we used, you know. There was nothing spectacular about it, but the heart of the piece, and I think what was beautiful about those original productions is the heart of the piece was so strong that you didn't need all of anything else. You needed your 7-person band, sometimes a 6-person band, your scaffolding, you know, your lights here and there, the tables, and that's it. That's like all you need. It's kind of a beautiful thing to just trust the material that much.
Yeah, and you know, I don't even know if I would say minimalism was revolutionary, but I would say the more revolutionary elements of the show were the fact that we had a musical theater show with people, with characters who had AIDS.
Yeah.
The fact that we had a big romantic number in the first act between two men. Like, seeing that in 97, 98, seeing that as a little high school girl, seeing two characters on stage, one of, you know, both who were men, one of them was dressed as a woman, you know, kissing and having this beautiful relationship was way more revolutionary to me than scaffolding.
No, I know.
Michael Greif loves his scaffolding.
But that's what I mean. The piece was so revolutionary that it didn't need anything grand. It didn't need a grand spectacle set to go with it. But as I said, I first did the show in 2003, and I was astounded by how many people still came. Every city we were in, same people at the stage door every night. You know, they're here for their 75th show, their 80th show, their 100th show, because you can still get the $20 seats in the first two rows. You just camp out. And so many of these people were touched by the show. That's the reason why they would do that. They cared that much. For a lot of people, it was that, no voice had existed for them before then. Mm-hmm. And now this show came out that they connected with, and so they were fans for life.
Anyway, so let's talk about Rent Live.
Yes, the new version.
So Rent Live.
Lots of changes.
Lots of changes, but they were minor changes. That's the thing, is you could say there were a lot of changes, but none of it changed the plot. They were all changes that any book writer would have done before they went to Broadway. They were the changes that Jonathan Larson would have approved of. Little sentence changes, little line changes, little line reading changes, little things here and there that made the story work. In fact, the biggest adaptive change that made the most sense to me was the fact that they had Keala Settle as the Seasons of Love soloist. And that soloist has always just been some random woman. They're always just standing on the proscenium, just singing that song. And there's no connection to the text. There's no connection to the text in that song in Seasons of Love. They're just standing on the proscenium singing it. So what they did was they made it that she was the one running the life support meetings.
She was Paul.
She was Paul, right? She was the one who was like, here, we're doing our, our life support meetings. And so... our TV turned on and then my Leva dog went crazy. You crazy? I feel like they added a lot of things. They made a lot of little changes that didn't affect the text or the book overall, but added to it in just little ways. They trimmed the fat where it needed to happen in things like the voicemail, just little lines that didn't need to be there, little moments that just were redundant. You know, they got rid of them. And then all those voicemails they cut down, which was so smart. They made the, you know, they gave Mark more of a purpose. You know, he wasn't just narrating from this like angsty 90s white guy mentality of like, everything's hard and I can't relate to anything because, you know, my parents are paying for everything. Yeah. And instead they made these moments where he was actually narrating and mentioning how he had friends who had passed away and how difficult it was for him. And it added so much. Just these little things added, I don't know, it was monumental. It was so much. And honestly, it's what I've been wanting to happen to Rent for a long time. Because Jonathan Larson died, people treated it like it was the Bible. Like you couldn't touch this text. And it's weird because there's plenty of musicals that have been zhuzhed up throughout the years. Showboat is a great example. Showboat is the first major book musical in the history of musical theater, and it's been revived every few decades or so, and every time they have to fix the book a little bit because it becomes less relevant the older it gets, and not in major plot ways, just in minor dialogue ways. And that's what this felt like to me. It felt like we have a 23-year-old show. There's a few things that have not been fixed because A, the guy who wrote it died, and B, there's just things that are different in the context of 2019. You know, AIDS has this connection that's kind of far away and yet connected because everyone who was related to it, who's still alive, is on the older side. So you have to look at it from that lens.
Yeah.
So I feel like those little adaptive changes added so much. And then just even the little things where they had to change curse words because it was on Fox kind of made me realize how unnecessary a lot of the cursing was.
I heard you say that, and I feel that way. You could say that about any curse words in any piece. Like, what do they really add if you can use different words to mean the same thing? I feel like it's just a stylistic choice, but they had to pull them because this was network television. It was a logistical thing.
I don't disagree with you. However, having been in the theater scene and been in the fringe theater scene for a while, I can say that a lot of people who are hack writers tend to use curse words as a shorthand for their shittiness.
It was a tall task to figure out what things need to be changed for the modern audiences, what you need to change just for the logistics of it being on stage in a live performance.
But there have been live performances all the time. It's mostly been a live performance.
I mean, well, for cameras.
Yes.
For something, the way that they had the stage constructed, it was in the round basically, and there were a couple tiers of crowd.
Oh wait.
With walkways in between.
Wait, here's the thing we also have to talk about. Roger broke his foot yesterday. Roger broke his foot during a quick change.
Yeah.
Yesterday, the day before the live performance on TV. This guy, it's his big break.
Literally.
Oh, it was his big break.
It's rough. It's a really,
They did a big like search to find an unknown to be Roger. And then this guy breaks his foot during a quick change the day before this is going to be broadcast live. So this is one of the interesting things about watching it is that most of it was pre-recorded yesterday.
Almost all of it. Just the very last scene.
The last scene, which is the only scene you could see a cast on his foot.
Crazy. He wouldn't have been able to do the show at all.
So
he couldn't stand on it.
We were essentially, Rent Live was essentially a,
The dress rehearsal.
The final dress.
It was.
And that's what goes to show, you know, never mark your final dress.
Yeah.
Because
it could be the show.
There were moments where I felt like some of the performers were marking it, and I was like, they're waiting to perform full out tomorrow.
Yeah.
And they weren't. That's and cool. It's not their fault. It's...
Who would think of that? Why would you ever think that that would happen?
Yeah. It was insane. So, you know, props to Roger for making it happen and for all of them. And I do give them a lot of credit for just getting out in front of it and being completely honest about it and being like, this is what happened.
Yeah.
This is what's happening. It would have been way worse if they tried to, like,
they really didn't have any other choice. When you lose one of your leads and you basically only have one show. And
no understudy, because why would they? It's a live TV thing for one night.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing that I'll say. The performances, there were some really, really great performances.
So Jordan Fisher played Mark, and he is the first Mark of color, which is bonkers.
Yeah.
It's bonkers.
He was amazing. He made it his own.
I thought he was amazing.
I thought he was terrific.
I thought
really good.
I felt this was the first time, and it was a combination of him and the textual changes they added for him to connect him to the story. Because Mark is like, I'm on the outside, I'm watching, which is fine, but he needed to have a connection, and little one sentence changes added so much to his character, which I loved.
And you could tell he was taking the journey, that he really cared about his friends. He was vulnerable. He was snarky when he needed to be, but he was mostly like pure on the level, like just trying to be the good guy. Brandon Victor Dixon was amazing. We knew he would be amazing from the initial. The first time that they said they cast him as Collins, it was like, well, yeah.
So good.
He's going to be brilliant. And the reprise, the I'll Cover You reprise, already is powerful in the stage show.
They made it so much more powerful.
It was extraordinary because they had set up the Keala Settle character.
Again, they set up this whole community of people, life support people.
Yeah.
And they were literally holding him up at the end when he was like faltering and not able to stand there, which I thought was amazing. I love Vanessa Hudgens, and I can't tell you how many people were like, she needs to play Mimi. And every time I was like, what are you guys talking about? Vanessa Hudgens back in 2008 was ready to play Mimi. Vanessa Hudgens in 2019 is so far beyond Mimi, I can't even begin to tell you. Like, she's already played Rizzo in Grease Live. She's been on Broadway as Gigi in Gigi. She doesn't need to be playing a 20-something Anjou. She's 30 years old.
She's 19, but she's old for her
She's
age.
30 years old. She wanted to play Maureen, and she slayed it. I thought she was an amazing Maureen. I thought she was great.
Yeah.
And you've got it. The first song you do is Over the Moon, and you have to win everyone over, and you have to be charismatic enough where when everyone has been spending the whole entire first third of the show talking about you, when you show up, everyone's gotta be like, yeah, I'd fuck that. Everyone in the audience has to say that because she's bisexual.
Yeah.
And I thought she nailed it. I thought she was great.
Yeah.
Keala Settle should have been Joanne. That being said, Kiersey Clemons was amazing as Joanne.
Yeah, very good.
I loved her Joanne. She had a beautiful, like, really interesting voice, and I don't know, I just loved her. I thought she was really great.
Yeah, she brought a lot to Joanne. I mean, Joanne is a pretty straightforward character, but it's easy to go too far into schmacting territory with Joanne. You have to be really grounded, and I thought she was.
Yeah.
I thought she was honest, and like, you could tell that she really loved Maureen, but she was conflicted. Without it being too cartoony, because sometimes that's a problem where you don't see why they're together, and I felt like you could see why they were together even though they were opposites.
So the only thing I ever knew Tinashe from before this was the Britney Spears Slumber Party video, and every time I would watch it with my best friend Megan, we would be like, God, Tinashe is gorgeous, and she was gorgeous. And she was really good. I thought she was a really good Mimi. Like, I loved the way she flipped into her head voice on Out Tonight. Like, she did the full-on yodel out tonight. Like, I loved it. I thought she was great in Goodbye Love. I don't know, I thought she was great. I thought she was really wonderful. Like, she was hot and sexy, like you want that part to be, but she had the chops to back it up.
Yeah. I do want to say that I think Light My Candle is one of the greatest songs ever written for musical theater. The Roger Mimi dynamic, it's basically the whole song is just them meeting and this flirtation. And it's fun, and it keeps like the story moving. But that's her first scene. And you could tell from that very first scene that she was going to nail Mimi, that it was going to be good. Oh, yeah, it was Mario playing Benny. So Mario really...
Pop star from the early 2000s, Mario was really, Benny.
He made it his own. He made it his own. He was the one he took the most liberties, I think, with time dialogue or with rhythms in general. Like, just with the songs, but I thought it worked.
Benny
always can do his... He kind of can always do his own thing. He's basically the hero of the story, let's be real. But he's basically doesn't get to have as much fun as everybody else.
So James Leva was Angel. And I guess, because I don't watch it, I know I should, but I guess he was on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah.
And, you know, I gotta say, to me, he was like such a charismatic figure. There was a lot I liked about his performance. I think it was clear that he wasn't a Broadway performer, a musical theater performer, or maybe he is, I don't know. It seemed very daunting sometimes, the part. However, I felt like he was so charismatic and fun and interesting that it didn't matter. Like, that's the kind of part where if, as long as you have like charisma and you like own it, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't. It was rough for me to watch him, and for me to watch Roger. Those were the two for me that were the weakest in the cast.
Well, and we got to talk about Roger.
Yeah, he broke his foot.
He broke his foot.
But I mean, it's really hard to do this show anyway.
Well, here's
usually people do the show, you rehearse it, and then you do it for a year or whatever. They rehearsed it and they did it for one night.
So he broke his foot yesterday.
We saw their dress rehearsal performance. It's not going to be perfect, but that's why it might have behooved them to cast like a Roger who had done it or who had just recently done it.
You don't
it
know if
Broadway.
He's done it. That's the thing. He might have done it. Just because he's an unknown doesn't mean he hasn't done it.
I didn't check to see if he'd done it. I assumed he didn't because there was a lot missing in the subtext for me with Roger. A lot. Yeah, it's true.
Also, we were watching his dress rehearsal performance, so I'm kind of hesitant to like put a final thing down because that's the other thing. A lot of these performances tonight that we saw were their final dress rehearsal performance, which like, can you imagine being like, oh, I'm gonna like save it, I'm gonna mark it just because tomorrow is the actual big show.
Yeah, I mean, but you treat it as a performance. Every dress rehearsal.
But you don't know. That's the thing. That's what's so up in the air. Is like, I don't know.
But the crowd was full. I mean, you're still gonna give your performance. Okay, so what we saw was a dress rehearsal. So that's all we can really judge the performances on. So they might have been marking to save it for the show the next night, for the live show, which ended up not really happening except for the very end. But all we can really do is judge the performances from what we saw.
True.
So, I mean, I just feel like there was a lot of disconnect between Mark and Roger. You don't really see the friendship much. And that's kind of indicative in the show.
I think the book doesn't show their friendship very much.
Right.
There's a thing at the beginning, and then it's kind of up to the actors until you get to Goodbye Love.
So yeah. So I felt like the cast was very strong. I would have cast someone else as Angel personally. If you can't sing it, you can't sing it.
But I would argue that these things are not. It's the same argument that like Carrie Underwood got. Like, you need people, you need some names that people are going to recognize. And literally the only drag queens that people in America, middle America, are going to know are drag queens who are on RuPaul's Drag Race because they've mainstreamed it. So here's the only live TV musical we've ever done with a drag queen character. So it has to be someone who is on RuPaul's Drag Race. And it has to be someone who's a person of color. And they have to be right for the part. So I I didn't mind it as much. I thought his charisma got him by through a lot. Anything else, it was like, you know, whatever. Like, there's plenty of musical theater stars who used to get by on only charisma. Now it's like, if you don't sing a perfect F every time, why are you even here? And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think he played the shit out of Angel. I thought he really got the role. I think his death scene was beautiful. I think there was a lot that this version that ties into this. I think there was a lot this version got that you don't really get out of the stage version. Like, there's so many times when you see the stage version where you don't get that contact is not about, I mean, it is about sex, but it's a death moment. Yeah, it's Angel having this fever dream, this death fever dream. And then at the end he's gone. And they cut it out a lot. Cause they're like, what is this dumb song where they're saying sex, sex, sex. And it's like, no, it's this commentary on his, you know, last throes of life, dying from this disease that he got from sex.
And well, I agree with a lot of what you just said, because especially the change, some of the changes that they made that enhanced the story, that was one of them. And for me, the top of Act Two, where we did Seasons of Love in this version, was so much better than it is on the stage version, because there were things that they utilized. Life Support in particular, and Kiara's and Kiala Settle, with the camera work, to be able to connect the story in a way that it just is not done that way on stage, at least the versions that I've done. Everybody just walks on, sings, and
you just walk on and stand at the proscenium and just stare at the audience. And
because you fill in the gaps as an audience member, you fill in those gaps. But what they did in this version, I thought was really, really effective.
Made so much more sense.
It heightened Mark's character, heightened Angel's character, and the Kiala Settle character, who was the life support leader. I'm sure
and
she's
honestly,
not named Paul
I,
in this version, but
I could see Jonathan Larson. Like, I'm a Rent head, okay? Like, I don't know Jonathan Larson, but, like, you know, I read everything about Rent back in the day. He wasn't just some, like, musical theater fangirl. He knew musical theater. He knew the process of writing musicals. He won the freaking, like, Sondheim Award, awarded by Sondheim. Like, there's a picture of him and Sondheim in the Rent book. Like, he knows it. Like, that was the kind of change where I was like, Jonathan Larson must be up in heaven going, damn it.
But when we did the show back when it was still on Broadway, every move had to be exactly the same. Every costume piece had to be exactly the same. Every set, obviously the sets were all designed, they were all the same. We just used the same sets. And it's really nice to see, since it closed on Broadway and now off Broadway, that theaters can change it up. They can have different set designs, completely different artistic designs, having nothing to do with the original.
Oh yes, regional theaters have proven that there can be an all-white production of Rent.
Yeah.
And there have been.
I'm sure.
There have been.
But this to me, this television event was an extension of that, because we're moving to this new era where Rent can be reimagined.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they did that.
I'm so happy they did that, because the movie version happened way too fast. The movie version happened in like 05 or something like that. And the movie version was a dumpster fire because they didn't want it to be a musical, which was insane. So instead of getting recitatives sung, you have them speaking December 24th, 9 p.m. And you're like, why am I listening to them speak that? And that's just like the bare minimum of like all the myriad problems that the movie
version
has.
Yeah, you can watch our review of that. The Stealing Focus review is out there.
But this version actually did what I wanted. It adapted the text and made it relevant to now. It took the things that were problematic and changed them. Little things, like there's that line where it's Angel's funeral, and Mark is supposed to say these tourists had never seen a drag queen before. And instead he said, never seen someone like her before. And I was like, that's really effective. Or when Maureen is on the phone with Joanne going, let me be your slave, I'll kiss your feet, I'll be your slave. And it's like, yeah, this was clearly written by a white guy in the 90s who didn't understand the connotations of her saying to a black character, let me be your slave. Like, little things like that make yeah. all the difference, because all it takes is that one person, that one voice in your ear in the production team, when you're watching it in front of an audience going, you know, this, you should probably just change that. Like, that's all it takes. And Rent never got that.
Yeah, and I think that they made the right changes.
I agree.
I always, my vote for Think Twice Before You Poo-Poo It, which is obviously a terrible
He
lyric.
Said, before you reject it. What yeah. a better change.
Well, I always
before
thought it should be.
You reject it.
Well, but it didn't rhyme. So my idea was always
yeah,
say,
poo-poo
think
is...
twice before you say screw it. Worked a little bit better for me. But reject it worked too. I didn't even think about that one. There was a lot
poo-poo
of ones.
You poo-poo it.
I mean, it was just sort of line. Like, I mean, I guess the idea was...
I've hated it since I was 14.
I always hated it too, but Benny, you know, Benny's a yuppie now. He says things like that.
Well, I mean...
can always justify these things.
Larson never thought of the connotations of the fact that, you know, this is the man and he's always played by a black guy.
Well, and that was a big part. That was Michael Greif as well. The decisions that they made, for some reason or another, were always cast that way from the beginning through the very end.
But regional always theater productions the have cast Benny as a white guy all the time.
Taye Diggs was quoted as saying when they first came out, when the original cast was opening on Broadway, as how he was so appreciative that it didn't matter what color he was, that he could play the antagonist, the guy, the yuppie guy with the money who married the, you know, who married the rich girl, and it didn't matter that he was black, you know?
You guys, can we talk about how they made Idina Menzel and Taye Diggs stand next to each other during Seasons of Love? They were standing next to each other.
Do they hate each other?
They're divorced.
Well, does that mean, you know, they could still be friendly.
But Daphne Rubenvega was like, 500, I'm like, Daphne, hey.
Yeah,
pink hair, Daphne.
When I first did Rent, it was Jeanette Bayardell, and she was the greatest seasoned soloist I ever heard. She was even better than.
Oh, Kendall, I think so. Freddie Walker was there too. She was the original Joanne.
Yeah, she was there. She
yeah,
was.
They had the whole original Tracy cast
Toms,
there.
Tracy Toms did the movie, but that was her and
Daphne
were the two originals that weren't in the film version.
Yeah, but they had the whole original cast there.
Yeah.
And at the end, everyone was like, we're done. And I was like, there's no effing way they're not doing a Seasons of Love reprise without the original cast.
Yeah, there's an extended
version.
And
there they were.
That's it.
And
it's
there
for
they
a reason.
Were. Anthony Rapp was there. Adam Pascal was there.
They're all there. Of course.
The whole gang. Wilson Jermaine Heredia.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Award winner for Rent.
So I know a couple people who are in the production team. Lisa Zenny, who does costumes, and Barry Lee Moe, who does hair and makeup. And I'm curious, I've been in touch with him this week, but I hadn't talked to him since the foot break scenario. But I want to ask him exactly how this went down tonight. So was that audience there all night? They were there, and then they only did the very end. They only did the last song. So did they watch the other version live, like on
the
screen?
I don't know.
Now that's what I want to find out. But I'm just curious, because what we saw was a taped version from last night.
It was the final dress rehearsal, and then
except
at
the very end. So that crowd,
when he was doing the last tune-up.
It's a huge problem when your star breaks his foot the night before.
It's
live
bonkers to me that they didn't have an understudy.
International telecast.
It's bonkers. Okay, so these live telecasts, y'all need to just like pick someone from the ensemble to be an understudy. I don't know why that's so hard. Broadway does it. Like, just pick a freaking understudy.
Because it's not just the actors. You also got cameramen and women who are, they have their track too.
Understood. And but so again, they have a lot of money.
No, I mean, no, you're right. It's, I think they're going to now.
I think they should now.
They learned the lesson. It was the nightmare scenario. It's the day of the show, y'all.
It was the day of the show.
And you got a broke foot. You can't do it.
Yeah.
And there's no other time. It's not like, oh, let's postpone it. No, people got gigs, you know, they can't. People
also,
like, set things up, they're done
not
after tonight.
Just gigs, live multi-million dollar television event scheduled months in advance, advertisers. It's not just like people have plans. It's like, there's a shit ton of money put into this.
Yeah.
There's advertiser
but
money
put
into
this. But
not to pay
for understudies. Hey, look, there's Levi.
Levi, he's going to bed.
He's done. He's so done hearing about Rent. We should probably wrap this up.
Okay.
Levi's done.
Oh, yeah,
But again, I thought it was, I thought they made brave choices. All the points that you made, I agree with that.
I really liked the changes.
It
I'm
was
happy
time.
That
it was
we
time
are
for
finally okay with touching the Rent book,
yeah,
and making the changes that I think Jonathan Larson would have approved of. He was not some infallible, perfect guy who wrote a perfect musical theater book. There's no one who's ever done that.
Right.
Every musical theater writer ever, even way back in the day, they would have out-of-town tryouts and previews and
those
changes.
Those Gershwin guys were hacks.
Up until... Rent never got that luxury. And after the shine had worn off, it started not aging well for those of us who were a little older, those of us who could kind of remember the, you know, we were at the end of it, but we remembered the AIDS crisis. We were kids, but we were there, you know? Like, for this next generation, it's more about educating them about it. And telling them, this is a thing that happened. We can't let it happen again. Because if we forget, then it will happen again. So it was very important that this special added those moments, I guess, that reminded them of that. And connected, and just didn't make it like a backdrop of the story. Like, ew, AIDS is a pretty backdrop. It's like, no, these characters have this. They are dealing with it. And all these characters are living with this. And it has real life consequences.
Yeah.
And so
well, and the
I feel like that
lyric,
was important.
Living with not dying from disease is brilliant. And real quick, if you hear the term, thank you, Jonathan Larson, that's that same night that we were talking about, opening night off Broadway. They finished the show, everybody was quiet, and one person in the audience yelled out, thank you, Jonathan Larson. And he had just passed away, and there was all this applause. And every cast of Rent had a wooden skull, it was a wooden carving that said, thank you, Jonathan Larson, and it hung backstage on the set, but it was on the upstage side of the set, so you can't see it. And I would always, before every show, everyone would go and touch it, kiss it, whatever you do. It was a huge part of us, and so if you hear thank you, Jonathan Larson, or you see a print or a cutout or a picture of that wood print, that's what it is. And also, Jonathan Larson's parents were around. They took every cast to the Life Cafe, the real Life Cafe,
mm-hmm.
in the village. It's in the East
well,
Village.
Well, they and his sister had a big hand in Rent Live.
Yeah.
But
it was always amazing, yeah. and there would be wine and beer just sitting out, and the cast would go there. I went a few times, and his parents were amazing, and they would always get up and say a few words, not just his sister as well, and his friends. And one of the things his dad said the first time I went, which was amazing, is he was like, you know, we lost our son, but we have all of you. Which I thought was pretty amazing, because it was, their son had created this incredible work of art that spoke to so many people, and they lost him, and it must have been such an amazing, horrible tragedy that they went through, but what they got out of it was all of this life, or what their son was able to help other people with, just through this work of theater. So I thought that was, it was incredible, just working on the show itself. Back then, and even now, looking back, just a huge part of that was Jonathan Larson, just because he wrote this piece. He was the driving force behind it, and it spoke to so many people. So, thank you, Jonathan Larson.
Hey, Jonathan Larson.
Yeah,
so,
man.
So we liked Rent Live. I think it is on the better end of the live TV musical theater adaptations. I feel like... I mean, even the weak links in the cast weren't so weak that it took me out of it, you know? Like, I think the weakest for me were, like you said, Roger and Angel. But Roger was just kind of out of it for a couple songs, and it might have been because it was the dress rehearsal. And Angel, for me, he was more of a force of personality than a musical theater performer, so I didn't mind it. Like, if he was a little pitchy sometimes, I was like, I don't care, I'm living for your performance. Some of his line readings were to die for, and some of his interpretations were amazing. So, you know, I'm always way more forgiving of, like, a more interesting performance than, like, Skrelty Fs.
Yeah.
So I think we love Jordan Fisher the most, which was great because Mark's my favorite character. Cast me as Mark.
Jordan Fisher was fantastic.
He was beautiful.
Congratulations, you
the first Mark of color. It's insane.
he just got it. He understood the character. He sang it perfectly. He acted it brilliantly. And his movements, I've never seen a Mark move like that.
I actually really appreciated that he wasn't so angsty, that he wasn't so, He was sometimes, but he had a lot of life and light in him.
He was great.
And he brushed off a lot of that stuff, which I really appreciated. I thought Tinashe was great. I thought Vanessa Hudgens was amazing. I thought she was perfect. Like, stop trying to make Vanessa Hudgens something she isn't. She is way past what any of us ever thought she would be. She proved us all wrong. Right, Levi?
Levi.
Vanessa Hudgens. She's the best. I love her. She is way more than Gabriella from High School Musical.
And when I first heard that Brandon Victor Dixon was going to be Collins, I knew immediately that the reprise...
my God.
The cover you reprised was going to be incredible. Mm-hmm.
And it was.
And it was.
All of us, there were more of us here, we were all in tears. And we've all heard that song a bajillion times.
Yeah. Shout out to Marcus Paul James, who was mostly Collins when I was doing it. Also John Eric Parker. It's such an amazing song. And
shout out to Aaron Tveit.
So beautiful. But... just knowing what Brandon Victor Dixon could bring to it, just being like a higher voice, being a tenor, he just nailed it. And he's such a good actor.
Oh, so, my God.
So that those two for me.
Well,
were
that
really
whole
good.
Sequence was amazing. I don't think I've ever felt really such a strong connection to Contact. It was really beautifully staged.
It's over. Yeah.
The whole It's Over stuff. And conversely, Without You was exactly how it always is on stage.
It
exactly.
Works. They didn't touch it.
And everyone around us was like, wow, that's amazing. I was like, that's how it's always been.
Yep.
But Contact has always been under the sheet, but it was a lot more...
It was different.
It was a lot more clear what Angel was going through.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brandon Victor Dixon, he is a revelation. Like, yeah, as soon as we... You know, we did our vlog about Jesus Christ Superstar Live a little over a year ago, and he was one of the things we loved the most. So as soon as we saw he was cast in this, we were like, oh, yeah, sign me up, like, and 100%. He was amazing.
Even some of the ensemble parts really, stood out, like the guy who played Gordon. I'm having a problem with this credo.
Oh, my God. Wait, can we talk
that
about Gordon?
Was really good.
Find some of what you tease. Reason says...
I should have died.
And instead of saying...
He changed to 6 months ago.
He said 6 months ago. Instead of 3 years ago, and that was like...
Yeah.
He was like about to break down. I don't know who you are, a guy who played Gordon, but you... Oh my God, you ripped our hearts out in the best way possible. Like, all of us were sitting here, like, clutching each other's hands, like, oh my God. Keala Settle, till the cows come home. Keala Settle, forever. Like, she should have been... I mean, look, I loved the gal who played Joanne, but she should have been Joanne. I don't know why she wasn't. Like, it's Keala Settle.
Maybe she didn't have the time. Well, thank you so much, guys, for watching our vlog of Rent Live.
I hope you liked it. I liked it a lot. Way more than I thought I would.
Yeah.
Levi, did you like it?
Charlie?
Come here.
The
come here, big boy.
The dogs
come
are totally out
Levi,
of it now.
Ooh, jealous. Oh, you like Rent
Give
Live.
Me
you like Rent
Give
Live.
Me your
So thanks again, guys, for watching our vlog of Rent Live.
Happy Rent Live, everybody.
Check it out if you haven't seen it yet. And
the hairs, they're everywhere.
Go see it live somewhere, too.
Go see Rent somewhere. Go do it. Go sing some songs from it. The movie version sucks, but you can watch our review of it. But there's a great, great DVD of the final performance on Broadway.
Yeah.
Starring
with Rodney Hicks. Rodney Hicks is
with Renee Elise Goldsberry. Mm-hmm. And Eden Espinoza, and what's his name? Will Chase, I think.
Will Chase was in it, yeah.
Yeah, so a bunch of great performances in that. But
Rodney Hicks was in the original company as Paul.
He was,
finally
yeah.
came back as Benny. One of my close friends.
Yeah.
Close friends. Shout out to everybody for watching. Thanks again.
We loved it. Yeah. Rent Live was great.
We'll see you soon.
I approve. From one rent head to the world, thank you, Jonathan Larson.
Thank you, Jonathan Larson. Say bye, Charlie.
Bye. I love you, Levi. No day but to dawn.
Thanks for listening to Stealing Focus.
You can find more musical reviews on our YouTube channel and Facebook page, and of course, more podcast episodes available on iTunes.